So I was on a call. We were picked up. I'm sorry. We were called by a family member, a husband.
You were picked up?
Uh-huh.
That is an interesting start
hey
to any
baby,
call.
Hey, baby. Hey, baby. We got down. Called out because this patient was supposed to be going up to a local hospital to get a brain imaging scan to determine if there was something going on because she'd been having some symptoms of, you know, forgetfulness. It'd been increasing rather quickly. They were concerned about a particular type of dementia. Well, the problem is that she had progressed quickly to the point that she was now refusing to go to the hospital to get the test done. And they couldn't get her up there by the time the test was scheduled for. So they'd been told that they couldn't reschedule it that day because they were booked. And so we get there. And the husband called us. It's the wife that's the patient. And I'm trying to talk to the husband. And it's a really cool little house. It's been around since like the 50s or 60s. It was kind of designed a little bit differently. You know, it's one story. But I'm standing in the bedroom. And the husband's standing by the bedroom door. And the wife's sitting on the bed. And I'm talking to him. And she's getting irritated behind me.
Okay.
Because she's telling me to leave. Get out of her room.
Yeah, and like you haven't heard that from a woman before.
Exactly. Every woman. everybody in my life. It only hurts when, never mind. So anyway, she gets really irritated and she stands up and she goes, go on, get out of here. And she tries to push me. Now,
boy.
I am 6'4", 6'3", or 6'4", depending on 6'7" if I'm wearing heels.
Gotcha.
Right. And I'm a large dude.
Yeah.
She was 5'2".
Cool.
Maybe a 110.
Jesus.
So the husband actually started laughing because she went to push on me. She really put some effort into it and basically made herself sit back down on her bed.
Gotcha.
which made him laugh just because it looked funny and it caught him off guard, and which just made her madder at that point.
Yeah.
And she got even more upset. So yeah, so we eventually were able to get her onto the gurney and get her up to the hospital, and hopefully the ER could get her in to get her scanned and everything like
see
that.
What's so, going on.
He said, as we're going up to the hospital, he goes, it was just funny because you didn't move at all.
No.
He goes, you didn't even react.
No. You know? You probably noticed halfway through the act. Like, oh, wait, oh, she is pushing me.
No, he's like, you didn't miss a beat. It wasn't like you turned around and were offended or anything like that. She just tried to push you and you just stood there and kept talking.
At least you didn't like when she sat up, like put one hand on her face and just right. push it back down.
How dare you touch me?
I got into a minor tussle not Ooh, too long
ago.
Yeah, tussle. Which, being at EMS, you don't have to get, we're not the cops. We don't get in that many fights, but it happens.
Okay, I'm going to say something maybe not popular. There are days I go into work and it's not like I'm looking for a fight, but patient decided to hook it up with me would be too upset about it.
Right. This gal was no match for anyone on that scene, let alone me, which given it doesn't take much to be a match for me. I'm just a slender guy. I'm a twig, you know, not that much. But she's drunk and arguing with the cops, and we're just trying to get her to go somewhere. And she's sitting on a sofa. And so finally, I think things are reasonable. And I get there. She starts calling me a effing idiot. And we kind of close. I'm like, hey, it's we're going to go. I mean, you're on a POH. This isn't.
Right. The choice of going has been taken from you.
POH, by the way, is police officer's hold. There's now a police officer making medical decisions in your best interest for you. That's what's going on. Mm-hmm. And she stands up, gets in my face, puts two hands up. And I put my two hands up, grab her two hands. What's that?
What was that noise?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
So that wasn't me texting you, telling you to turn off your phone?
No. Nope. Nope. This just seems like, nothing to do with any of that whatsoever. So, Eddie moves it. So she stands up, gets kind of two hands, almost like a cat trying to scratch me, but she's going to push me. So I just kind of lock my two hands on hers and I just push her right back down in the seat. And then I changed it like, you know what? You were just going to get on the gurney. Now you're getting restrained on the gurney.
Exactly.
This is your new mode of transportation. So
very early on in my career, talking about drunk people.
Yeah.
I was working with a lady. We were joked about her as being the mom of all medics. Nothing flustered this lady. She'd been a medic for 7 or 8, 9 years at this point.
Right. Know.
So we're on scene. It's middle of the night. This guy is hammered drunk.
Yes.
Not like slobbering, staggering around drunk. Just thinks he's, you know, bulletproof drunk.
Okay, cool.
Right? He's the shit. In his dirty wife beater and sweatpants.
That's how you know the best ones.
Yeah. It's when they got the stains on the front.
Oh, yeah.
So we're in the back of the rig. I'm getting a nasal cannula out because this is during a time in EMS when everybody got oxygen.
Oh, yeah.
And the police are standing at the back door. The doors are open. My partner's getting ready to start an IV, and she's sitting there. And she's talking to the patient. She goes, "Is there anything else I can do to help you be more comfortable?" And he goes, "Yeah, take care of this." And he pulls down his pants, and he's rock hard stiff. Right? I'm in the process of, you know, dropping the cannula to jump on this guy. The cops start climbing the back of the rig. My partner, without missing a beat, "Oh, okay," looks over, and just with the first two fingers of her hand, whack!
Whoa!
Hits it right on the head.
First you finger of gloved hands, I'm guessing.
Yes. Okay. Gloved perfect. Hands, right. Well, she's getting ready to start an IV, but yeah, she just, like, I don't know, trying to knock it off. She whacks us solidly right on the head.
Damn.
He screams like a little girl, curls up in a ball.
No longer she hard. Does,
yeah, no longer hard. She doesn't miss a beat. She goes back to, "Okay, so now we've done that. We're just going to go ahead and start an IV on you real quick, sir." The cops are having to hang on to the back doors because they're laughing so hard at this point.
Hey, you know what, though? She did exactly what he asked.
She did. She met the requirements of the request.
That is a be careful what you wish for moment. Right. Because you just might get it. And, yeah. Served.
Yes, exactly. So, anyway, welcome to Medical Stuff. My name is Mark. Who am I? Frankum. And that is Chris. Why am I here? Finkston, right over there. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's a Friday night.
It is.
And I'm sober.
Yeah. We can fix all this, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but we've seen what happens when we drink while we're doing the podcast. I've got never solutions. Usually a positive thing.
Although, amazingly, none of our listeners ever see what happens when we drink when we do the podcast because right. We have to scrap those episodes.
Exactly. So, what are we talking about tonight, Chris?
Dementia.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. There was an easy like joke in there. Like, I forgot. But I'm like, I'll spare everyone the yawn on that one. Exactly.
So what a lot of people don't understand is that dementia is really more of a generalized term.
It's a symptom, really.
Is it?
Yeah.
Or is it a generalized term?
It's a generalized symptom.
So it includes many different types. So, I mean, when people say, well, I have dementia or I have Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. The problem is that from what I could find, there's not an exceptional amount of benefit for doing the testing to determine which kind of dementia you have.
Dementia is dementia.
Dementia. The treatments are so similar for a lot of them, you know, because there is no cure.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently I went on an Alzheimer's. For those of you who aren't in the room with us at this point, Chris adjusted the microphone so it was more directly in front of me, at which point I promptly slid over my seat so I was farther away from it again.
Mark is a self-proclaimed wiggle butt, and we could probably – oh. We have a job opening.
Excuse
here.
Excuse me. I'm a fidgeter.
Fidgeter. No, you literally said, well, your mom calls you wiggle butt.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, he's made a wiggle butt. Yeah. It was today. It was really awkward.
Yeah. Mom, not in front of the guys. But I don't want to get sidetracked, but I had a call where that kind of happened with a 30-year-old male. I'm like, come on. Anyway, I digress.
Isn't this one where his mom called him out for not having a job?
No, that was a call that was great. That was fantastic.
It was one of those classic, there's absolutely no reason for you to go to the hospital for your minor head cold.
Well, it wasn't a head cold. So he had to drink some Go Lightly because he was getting a colonoscopy because he basically eats junk food all day. He eats nothing but junk food and he has diarrhea a lot. And he's like, mom, correlation sick. There. Yeah, seriously. And so he had to get a colonoscopy. Well, Go Lightly, get this, Frankum, makes you shit your brains out. Yeah.
You don't go lightly.
No. You go a lot, you know. And right on the package, it says may cause nausea, abdominal cramping, diarrhea, which is interesting. May cost. No, probably will. I'm going to go with.
The secret prize inside the box should be a roll of toilet paper.
Yeah. And so.
It should have a picture of Tony the Tiger on the front squatting.
It's great. And that's not enthusiasm. That's just necessary because he's putting so much effort. Anyway. So, and it says this right at the bottom, like, this can happen up to 8 hours after the last time you drink this.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
you're going to lose weight by drinking this stuff because you're going to be pooping out all the stuff that's built up in your colon.
So, guess what the symptoms are?
Upset stomach.
Yeah.
Diarrhea.
Yeah.
And abdominal pain.
Yeah. And so, I'm like, okay. So, what did you last have this? Like, 6 hours ago. I'm like, all right. So, this is expected. This is what you should expect. Did your physician tell you that this was going to happen? Well, yeah. But this is way worse than what he could have possibly meant. And so I'm like, okay.
No.
And so I'm like, well, and here's the thing. I don't advise any up and coming paramedics to do this or current paramedics. Do not.
Don't follow our lead.
Blanket statement. Don't do this. So I asked him, I said, so do you want an ambulance ride up to the emergency room for this? And he looks at me and goes, well, what do you expect me to do? This is the part you do not do. Well, take some Pepto-Colin sick to work like most grown men would. That's what I said.
No, it was just one of those phrases that as it passed your lips, you went,
ah, shit.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have said that. That may get me a call to my supervisor.
It's kind of, if you've ever thrown an object at your brother when you were little, and then you kind of realize, oh, that's going to hurt, and you try and grab it back.
Yeah.
Same story. But then the best part is his mom goes, ha, he'd have to get a job to call out from first. And I'm just like, here's the thing. What I said hurt, that cut deep. That cut deep. So he just starts railing on me on the way out about how I'm not taking him seriously and that I don't know what it means to be I think he's an ambulance driver, but I don't know what it means to be an ambulance driver and take care of patients and all this stuff.
Now, did you go in the back of the ambulance with him?
I didn't.
Was it your turn to be in the back of the ambulance?
It was.
So you dumped this on your partner?
My partner was unthrilled. Unthrilled. And she was telling me, she's like, hey, yeah, no, thanks for not only making him mad, but giving me another call. Thanks, partner.
Now, didn't you tell me a follow-up to the story that you saw him working later at a fast food restaurant, like a year later?
Not a year later, but like several recently.
Oh, yeah?
This was recently. Yeah, I...
you couldn't figure out why he was glaring at you while you were waiting in line.
He was absolutely... And then all of a sudden I looked, because he had a very distinct name. Mm-hmm. And I remember... I'm not going to say what his name is, obviously, but he had a very distinct name. And he's kind of looking at me. And at first I'm just like, oh, maybe he just hates his job. And then I look down and I'm like, oh, shit. I know that name. This is probably... So that was probably maybe... That could have been more a year than ago. Probably about a year ago when that happened. So this... I'm probably 6 years out from the call. Mm-hmm. I'm 7 years out from the call now because it was before I was a supervisor. But yeah.
So did you just order your food with extra spit?
You know, I think I did. I think I went in there. I got like a medium fry and a drink. So
kind of hurt.
Yeah.
You get your own drink in this place. So
I did. I walked in. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway. So dementia.
So anyway, like I said, dementia is more of an overriding term for a whole group of them. We're going to go through a number of them tonight.
Yeah. An example dementia would be like memory loss.
Okay.
Yeah. Just reading what you wrote.
Right. I didn't write it. I don't know where this came from. So, the most popular, not, I guess most popular is not a good way to put that. The most common type of dementia would be Alzheimer's.
Right.
Between 60 and 80% of cases of dementia are caused by or actually diagnosed as Alzheimer's, according to the Alzheimer's Association. And early signs of Alzheimer's include depression, forgetting names, recent events, depressed moods. I may have Alzheimer's.
Right, I was going to say, this is...
I had a hard time remembering my dog's name the other day.
This is scary.
Yeah. Now, pet peeve moment.
Okay.
It's not Alzheimer's.
Or old-timers.
Or old-timers. It is Alzheimer's, and it's named after somebody.
German, actually.
I don't remember what he did.
I'm going to guess he discovered
the disease. I'm just going to say right now, that joke may come up again.
Okay. So, yeah.
Depression is not actually part of the Alzheimer's disease. Kind of like when we were talking about the transgender identity episode. Mm-hmm. That being depressed is not part of being transgender. It's a symptom of being transgender.
Gotcha.
Being depressed is not... it's not part of having Alzheimer's, but patients with Alzheimer's tend to have severe depression.
Which, understandable.
Right.
Get rid of this. This is My worst fear is actually to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's someday. I'll just be honest, just because it's one of those things where it's not necessarily a quick process, and along the way you lose so much.
Well, there are many, many horrific diseases out there. I am not trying to downplay any other disease.
No.
Alzheimer's, in my mind, is the worst disease there is.
Right.
Because it takes away the one thing from you they say can never be taken away.
Yeah.
And that's your memory, and that's your mind. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets to the point where you can't remember your loved ones. You don't remember your children. You don't remember your life.
Right.
And so now, being paramedics, these can be very challenging patients.
Absolutely, they can. Because some of the most challenging.
One of the problems is that these patients, I mean, they've been adults. They know they're an adult, mm-hmm. usually, in the earlier stages, and they don't know they have Alzheimer's. So they have an expectation of what they should be allowed to do.
Oh, yeah.
And when they're not allowed to, it drives them crazy.
Could you imagine being treated like a child now?
Right.
You'd take offense to it. Not being told
you can't go out.
Yeah. What do you mean I can't go out?
I ran a guy who broke out a window of a memory care unit mm-hmm. and was trying to climb over the wrought iron fence because all he wanted to do was go for a drive. It was a beautiful day outside. He wanted to get in his car and go for a drive.
Yeah.
And he got mad at staff and tried to break out because they wouldn't let him go out and do that.
Which, you know? I could see myself doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, there was a gentleman who it was his first day in a memory care unit, and he was trying to get out the door, and he partially assaulted a staff member who was trying to stop him, mm-hmm. one of the techs. And we got there, and God love our firefighters, but sometimes the thing is, they were trying to do what they felt was right, and they didn't think this guy really needed to go to the hospital because he didn't necessarily have a complaint.
Okay.
Right. And so they were saying, well, maybe you should contact the primary care physician and talk about adjusting his medications, which is a viable thing to do. But what they didn't understand, and I was standing there listening to this, and staff were getting fairly frustrated with his fire crew. And the fire guy asked me, he goes, so, well, you know, Mark, what do you think? And I said, well, no, I see where you're going with this. But the thing is that pretty much SOP, you know, standard operating procedures, they're going to have to go up and be ruled out for a medical reason. Because with these patients, an infection can really mess things up.
Yeah.
And until they fix the infection, they're not willing to adjust the medications because adjusting medications isn't going to do any good. They have to fix the underlying infection.
And the hard part with Alzheimer's or dementia patients in general is that getting a history from them can be very difficult to do.
Right.
You know, for example, normally if I was worried someone might have a urinary tract infection, I could ask that person, hey, how's urination been for you?
Right.
Because sometimes urinary tract infections will cause an odor or discoloration. Alzheimer's patient is not necessarily going to have that information for you. And so these can be very hard to come up with those underlying diagnosis because whereas most patients, the primary source of our information for these field impressions and for a physician's diagnosis is from the patient themselves.
Right.
And when you lose that investigative piece, it's very difficult. It's very easy actually to miss something.
Right. Unfortunately, I mean, and okay, now I'm not going to be hammering on memory care unit workers. They have a very difficult job.
Yeah.
They have, you know, and one of the difficulties of the job is that you have a patient who's upset or you have a patient who is trying to do something you can't let them do. And you talk them down from doing it, you may be back in this position in 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Having the same conversation. And it can be frustrating. But I don't lie to Alzheimer's patients. I don't do it. Because the thing is, they're not stupid.
No.
They know when they're being bullshitted.
Yeah.
You know? And as soon as you go fall into that category, they will not trust you again.
And there are certain feelings that will stick around past mm-hmm. memory. One of the common things that can happen in Alzheimer's too is you got to remember there are hormones associated with things like anger. Mm-hmm. There's adrenaline, there's testosterone, those are these things that can get flowing. And even though the memory isn't formed as maybe why they're mad, those hormones can still be present. Mm-hmm. And that actually creates a kind of a cycle of anger. Because mm-hmm. normally if someone's angry about something, and they don't have Alzheimer's, you can stymie that anger and bring hormone levels down by talking your way through a problem.
Right. Or coming to a resolution for what's angering you.
Yeah. And an Alzheimer's patient, they might have started out with something that legitimately frustrates them. Mm-hmm. They may forget that very soon and very shortly.
Right.
And they're just left with the hormones of feeling angry. And that's very without having an anchor point in that conversation to refer to and a problem to fix to their satisfaction, mm-hmm. you lose the ability to talk somebody down.
Right. Well, so this guy, you know, once I said that to the fire department, the nurse goes, "Thank you." and they're like, "Oh," I'm like, "Yeah, I said, you know, because we have a memory care unit, a geriatric psychiatric care unit. This is where you will go to get your medications adjusted over, you know, weeks or months." Mm-hmm. And then once they get you back to a point of being functional, then you'll be released back to your facility at that point. They will not take a patient until they've been medically cleared for other problems.
Yeah.
So this guy, it was his first day there. He'd get shown up the day before. He wanted to leave and go home. That's all he wanted. This wasn't his home.
Yeah.
So I'm standing there and I was like, "Sir, we're gonna take you up to the hospital." "I don't need to go to the hospital." "Yeah, I know, but, you know," and so I'm talking to him and I go, "We need to take you to the hospital." "Why do I need to go to the hospital?" "Well, we need to make sure you don't have an infection." "I don't have an infection." I said, "Well, unfortunately, you can't really tell me that." He goes, "What do you mean I can't tell you that?" I go, "Have you ever heard of Alzheimer's?" "Yeah, it's a horrible disease." "You've been diagnosed with it." "What?" I said, "You've been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And your wife loves you very much. She tried to take care of you for as long as she could, and she can't anymore because your disease has progressed to the point that she can't take care of you anymore. And this is where you live now." And I got lucky.
Yeah.
This guy was having a moment. He wasn't the Alzheimer's patient who's completely disconnected. He was still connected with the conversation that was being had in front of him.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, my God." I said, "Yeah, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you." I said, "But, you know, this is where you live, and we need to go and make sure it happens because, you know, this can affect things worse." Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes later, I'm back to the ambulance. "I just want to go home. I want to go home and see my wife." Completely forgot the conversation we just had.
Yeah. And that's the difficult part.
Right. You know, and this is the difficult part for people who are, you know, just this last weekend, I went on Alzheimer's, a walk for the cure. Mm-hmm. Up over in Portland with my mom. My aunt has a fairly advanced form of Alzheimer's. She's still able to live at home with her husband. Then my ex-wife, her father, has got a very advanced stage of Alzheimer's to the point where he's in a care facility and pretty much immobile, you know. So this is very personal to millions of people, but when you're there, they talk about, they have these flowers. And they're made out of fabric and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the flowers, I believe, don't mess up the colors, is for what they call the angels. And these are the people that are taking care of family members at home who have Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult on these people because this is a 24-hour-a-day disease that just doesn't let up. And it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Because you're having the same conversations over and over and over again. You know, you're fighting the same battles over and over and over again. So, right. You know, it's very, very difficult. And so, you know, if you know somebody who's living with somebody with Alzheimer's, please give them as much support as you can.
Well, you got to remember, I mean, one of the difficult things about it is this might be considered by some an inappropriate comparison, but it is kind of like compared to taking care of children. Mm-hmm. So, like, I have two toddlers here, mm-hmm. and I love them both. Not a lot of sense of how the planet works. And Alzheimer's patients can lose that sense they once had. However, here's the difference. My kids, foiled by a baby gate.
Right.
Well, not anymore, actually. But for a while,
they at least were. Well, yeah, but still, I mean, if you lock the upper lock.
Here's the thing, though. An adult, they know how to use keys. Mm-hmm. They know how to drive.
Oh, yeah.
That's hard to contain.
Yeah, they haven't lost those sort of things. And in their mind, there's a lot of times where they think they're 40 years old.
Yeah.
They're 30 years old. They're 20 years old. There's a term that comes along with this where it's called confabulation.
Oh.
Where they will actually for gaps in their memory or gaps in the logic, they will actually just make up the story. And it's completely real to them. And you're just not going to convince them otherwise.
Damn.
You know, that they're 40 years old. I will say the most common thing I've heard from elderly patients with Alzheimer's that are female. When my dad gets here, you're in big trouble.
Ooh.
Ma'am, you're 97.
I tell you what, if I do see your dad, right. I am in big trouble. I'm in
a huge amount of trouble, you know.
Something went awry on this call.
The most I've ever been cussed at was by an elderly Alzheimer's patient.
Mm-hmm.
All the way over to a hospital off of 205 from King City. So, anyway, Alzheimer's, like I said, depression is not part of it. So the cause of Alzheimer's, they really don't have a good idea what causes Alzheimer's. They understand the effects of it, but they don't understand really why it's going on. Alzheimer's damages and kills brain cells. Brain affected by Alzheimer's has many fewer cells and many fewer connections among the surviving cells than a healthy brain does. And as more and more brain cells die, Alzheimer's leads to significant brain shrinkage, which leads to other problems. We've talked about traumatic brain injury. So, you know, if you have a fairly advanced stage of Alzheimer's and you fall, you have a much greater chance of having a severe brain injury.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that just because there's not enough connections in the brain or?
Well, because the brain's shrinking. So it has more room to slosh around in there.
Oh, yeah.
Bounce off things.
That's right. So because we talk about in head trauma, you have that coup contra coup.
Exactly.
And
plus, the brain is damaged. Plus, there's not as many connections. Plus, there's not as many brain cells. So everything's worse.
Right.
You know. There are two types of abnormalities that they see. There's plaques and there's tangles. So what are plaques, Chris?
Well, plaques, so those are, I guess, like a clumping. It's a clump of protein. They're called beta amyloids.
Mm-hmm.
They may damage or destroy brain cells in a few ways, and that includes interfering with cell-to-cell communication. So like Mark was talking about, the connections. When those connections are interfered with, that creates a lot of issues. Kind of moving forward, and that's where you'll see like speech centers or memory centers will start to degrade. Although the ultimate cause of the brain cell death in Alzheimer's isn't known, the collection of beta amyloids on the outside of the brain cells is prime suspect. Mm-hmm. And I believe that is a diagnostic tool as well, isn't it?
Probably. Yeah, I think so.
Gotcha. Or is this the one where like autopsy, this is where they find these?
No. I think they can do brain scans and they can see it on the brain scans before the patient dies. And that's how they'll diagnose it as Alzheimer's, as opposed to some of the other ones we're going to talk about here in a little bit later in the episode.
Yeah. And so there's plaques and there's also tangles. So brain cells depend on an internal support and transport system to carry nutrients and other essential materials throughout their long extensions. This system requires the normal structure and the functioning of a protein called tau.
And the Alzheimer's disease just interferes with that.
Gotcha.
And so there are five stages of Alzheimer's. So stage one, your doctor will interview about your memory problems. If you're at risk for Alzheimer's, history is, but really there's no noticeable symptoms at this point. So you may not even know you have Alzheimer's. And this can last for a couple of years. Now, 10 signs of Alzheimer's. You right. Know the 10 signs. Now, this isn't one of those things that I believe that you can have like one or two. You know, I think you need to have a fairly large number of these before you think you have Alzheimer's. Memory loss memory loss that disrupts daily life.
Gotcha.
Right. Challenges in planning or solving problems. So you really aren't that great at, you know, when you come to a hurdle in your day, you don't get over it very easily. You can't think your way around it. Difficulty completing familiar tasks at home or at work or at leisure. So things that you've normally done are now becoming more difficult to do, not from a physical standpoint, from a mental standpoint.
Gotcha.
I mean, as you age, it's going to become harder to mow the lawn because your knees are bad, your back is bad, you know.
But in this case, you know, you used to be able to balance a checkbook, no problem.
Right.
Now you just can't make the numbers add up.
Right. Confusion with time or place. And we're not talking about you know, oh, I thought I went to the other room and I forgot what I went in there for because right. God knows I have Alzheimer's.
or crap, it's already 2 o'clock. That yeah. happens today.
my favorite is when I pick up my phone to do something, get completely disrailed, go do something else, put my phone down, then think, oh, crap, I still need to do that. trouble understanding visual images or spatial relationships. New problems with words and speaking or writing. Misplacing things and losing the ability to retrace the steps. So we all put stuff down and forget where we put it.
Right.
But it's doing that and then not being able to work your way back through what you were doing to kind of go back and find them. Decreased or poor judgment. I've had that since a teenager.
Most especially while a teenager, actually. Right. that's actually seemed to improve over the years.
Unfortunately, no. Mm. Withdrawal from work or social activities because of, and I think this is probably secondary to completing familiar tasks, you know, not being able to problem solve. If you're going to go out and meet a group of people and you go to the wrong place or you go the wrong direction, you're not able to really think your way around that. So then you tend to withdraw from these things.
Gotcha.
Because if we don't put myself in the situation in the first place.
If there's situations that make you feel bad, you're naturally going to start avoiding them.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
More Mountain Dew, man.
Yeah.
Changes in mood or personality. So now again, we're not talking about the crotchety old person that, you know, hey, get off my lawn, you know. So stage one, like we said, you may not even know that you have it. A lot of times this is a risk factor sort of thing. It's, you know, people in your family have it. Stage two, the decline will happen at a greater rate than similarly aged people without Alzheimer's. For example, forget familiar words or family members' names or where they place something. So a certain amount of this is going to happen as you age. Because as you age, your brain function at a certain point will start decreasing.
And that's just like any other part of your body.
Right.
Yeah. Except for my pectorals.
Oh, I thought you were going a completely different direction.
No. No, I actually was, but then I looked at you and I'm like, no, you know what? It's too predictable.
Exactly.
I think I'm going to go ahead
and go with the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. No. <Ba-dum-cha>.
So, stage three, you know, this is there a number of symptoms in stage three. Getting lost while even when traveling a familiar route. Finding it hard to remember the right word or names, being unable to remember what you just read, not remembering new names or people. That's had that since I was a kid. Misplacing or losing a valuable object, decreasing concentration during testing.
I have a story.
Okay.
Losing valuable objects. So. My child. No, I'm joking.
I have three.
Yeah. You notice you only ever seen two?
Right. No, anyway.
This was is one of the anniversaries for Jesse and I. It was when we lived in our old house. And I had gone out and I went and got her some diamond earrings. Yeah. I'm like, oh, nice.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes, I know this story.
And so, yeah. So I set up the whole house. She was coming home from work. I made an awesome steak dinner. House was perfect. I did all the laundry. You know, that kind of stuff.
Took away all her excuses to have sex with you that night.
Oh, yeah, to not have sex with me. Right. It's just, yeah, I was nailing this. And
I got to do. Laundry's done.
Yep.
I need to clean it. It's cleaned.
Yep.
I need to make dinner's ready.
Your bath is drawn. Just go take your bath. Get that done with. Anyway, so.
Here's some aspirin.
Yeah. For the headache. So, because we're going to kind of pull the earrings out later, I kind of stashed them. And I just forget where I stashed them. Just completely forget about it because I was so stressed about getting the house clean. Because the earrings were like I woke up that morning, went out, bought earrings, came back. And then cleaned the house, did a whole bunch of work and all that stuff. And then last minute she's coming home. I'm like, oh, I should go grab those earrings really quick and just kind of get them a little more, you know, a little closer. Fucking couldn't find them. Couldn't find them. And then she comes home. She's like, oh, the house looks great. Oh, thank you for dinner. And I'm like, I fucked up. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I bought you diamond earrings. She's like, that's not a screw up. I'm like, I lost them. She goes, that's a screw up.
Now, I will say this. Jesse knew this about Chris before she married him.
Yeah. And she was she saw how bad I felt. And she actually felt bad that I felt so bad.
Right.
And so it ended up. So A few years later, or not even a few years, it was a year later, I go into interview for the field training officer position at our agency. And there's a panel interview. It's a bunch of supervisors, managers, and our VP. Mm-hmm. So the VP of operations is sitting there, and they're asking me a bunch of questions. And I'm doing pretty darn well. I've always interviewed decently well. And finally, the VP goes, so I got one more question. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, where do you think the earrings are? My wife also works for agency, and she told him the whole story right before my interview. And I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, well, your answer question's pretty good up till that one. So, yeah. Anyway.
Where were they?
I did end up finding them. I had stashed them behind the TV in a little black box. And so, because I had looked behind the TV in a panic, because I'm like, God, I thought I put them back there. But they're in a little black box. I put them back there, did some work all day. They must have traded some dust. And when I looked back there, it looked like it one of the AC adapters mm-hmm. for the TV. And I just, my eyes just didn't catch it. Same flat black color, same shape, right next to another one. That's about it. And
did
it was,
she like them once you found them?
She did.
Oh, good.
She did. But that was actually, because I had the interview for the field training officer spot, which I ultimately got. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I had the interview for that, and I still hadn't found them at that point. And that was like maybe a month. It's just within about a month of when those. So yeah, it took me about another month or two to find them. Because I'd given up. And just like, it was just like that mystery that'll never resolve. Then right. I'm like, holy crap, which is great. And then she came home like, hey, diamond earrings. It was like a surprise, you know.
So in stage three, the symptoms become more clear over a period of about 2 to 4 years. Only people close to someone in this stage may notice the signs. Your work quality is going to go down. Been going on for years. They may have trouble learning new skills. Can't read a 12 lead.
I think we need to get you checked, brother.
It's really starting to worry me here. Other examples of stage three are getting lost while traveling a familiar route. Hey, I get to work every day, so I think I'm good.
Yeah, there you go.
Finding it hard to remember the right words or names, being unable to remember what you just read, not remembering new names or people, misplacing lost. Okay, so we went over most of these, so Chris is going to have to do some editing, apparently. Decreased concentration during testing. Again, that takes a couple years, 2 to 4 years for that for you to transgress stage three.
So stage four. So stage four lasts about 2 years, and this kind of marks the beginning of what they consider diagnosis Alzheimer's disease. So you or your loved one will have more trouble with complex but everyday tasks. Mood changes such as withdrawal and denial are more evident. Decreased emotional response is also frequent, especially in like a challenging situation where you'd expect an elevated emotional response. New signs of decline that appear at stage four may also include decreased awareness of current or recent events, losing memory of personal history, and trouble with handling finances and bills. I'm done. I'm joking. So stage five lasts about 1.5 years and requires a lot of support. Those who don't have enough support often experiences feelings of anger or suspiciousness, although even those with support can have these symptoms as well. People in this stage will remember their own names and close family members, but major events, weather conditions, or their current address can be difficult to recall. They'll also show some confusion regarding time or place, and they have difficulty counting backwards. So the problem is when we're talking about stage four and five, they are both severe stages, and especially like loved ones will really notice. But from the EMS side, if we don't know this person or know their history, we can be fooled.
Oh, yeah.
And not know that this person has Alzheimer's.
So moving on from there, we have stage six. And there are five identifiable characteristics that develop over the course of about 2.5 years for stage six. 6A, or the first part of it. So they have a hard time changing their clothes. Simple tasks are now becoming much more difficult. They will need help putting them on correctly. And we're not talking about just like, oh, that doesn't go with those pants.
Right.
We're talking about not being able to button the buttons, not being able to do up the pants, not being able to tie their own shoes. You'll have hygiene problems. A decline in oral hygiene begins. They need to help adjust They need help adjusting the water temperature before baths. They will get into baths that are just way too hot or way too cold.
Wow.
You know, because they just don't, it doesn't, they're not, they're just not processing the information correctly. Going to the toilet. At first, some people will forget to flush or throw away toilet tissue. As it progresses, they'll lose the control of their bladder and their bowels, and but you know, with need help with cleanliness. And those are actually a couple stages. Those are, you know, six. This is, it happens in succession. So we talk about five different parts of this, and those are, you know, the last four, or the last three, is the stages of not being able to use the restroom. You know, by this stage, memory is much worse, especially around current news and life events. Counting backwards from 10 will be difficult. They may experience a fear of being alone. They'd be fidgeting.
Yeah. Uh-oh, Mark.
a lot of frustration, some shame. And this is where they start getting suspicious of people pronounced. You know, they've been suspicious of people up to this point. And part of this, and then also a paranoia comes in. And the part of this, I believe, probably comes from the fact, it's not helped by the fact that at this point in the disease, a loved one has probably become your power of attorney.
Right.
Which is a process where you go to court, and the court, after you meet a certain criteria, says, yes, this person can no longer make decisions for themselves. So a son or a daughter or a family member, or if there's no family members, the patient becomes a ward of the state, and they have a social worker that will take over the person's finances. Mm. And even to the point that they can take over their medical decisions.
Oh, wow.
So we show up and the patient, well, you've run into this. You go to a memory care unit and the patient won't go to the hospital, but you have to take them to the hospital because the POA, power of attorney, says they need to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And this is where it can become very frustrating. I had one lady threaten to bite me. these patients, you want to be gentle with them, and you have to be gentle with them. But if they decide to fight, the problem is that even though she's 75 years old, she's fighting for her life.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't just start wailing on these people, and especially some of these elderly guys. I ran a call where this gentleman got very frustrated and was trying to get out, and he started fighting. The guy's an ex-boxer.
Uh-oh.
He's dangerous.
Yeah. Well, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is it's not just like, because you talk about caring for a toddler. Mm-hmm. The difference of caring for a out-of-control child,
right,
who's young and just doesn't have sense, their brain's not developed, to an adult is that this is an adult-sized person, mm-hmm, can do adult-sized things. And I think a lot of us think of Alzheimer's as 70- and 80-year-old people. Unfortunately, mm-hmm, it affects people much younger than that.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. So that guy, you know, and so back to the caregivers, like I said, I don't want to rail on them because they have a very difficult job. But one of the defense techniques that's used in these facilities a lot of times is appeasement, mm-hmm, you know, distraction. But again, these people know when they're being fed a line of bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so this guy punched a staff worker and he tried to hit another patient. They've been able to successfully divert him out the back to their back area, and they're having a staff member walk with him. When we get there, we go in, he's calm, right? Mm. But he still needs to go get checked out.
Yeah.
Right? So I walked up to him and I introduced myself. I find that carries a lot of weight with these people, if you just introduce yourself properly.
Sure.
Shook his hand, said, hey, do you want
to carries a lot of weight with me.
Right. You know, I said, hey, do you want to get out of here? He goes, yeah, I do. I said, great, we got a gurney over here. Let's go have a seat. Mm-hmm. So he comes over, he sits down on the gurney, goes, where are we going? And she meant, well, you're going to a parade.
Mm.
It's pitch black outside. It's 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know, and I just remember this guy looked at her. He looked at me like, what the hell is wrong with her? Just a look on his face was classic. I went,
she has Alzheimer's. Yeah. Sir.
I looked at him and go, we're not going to parade. Yeah. And this is where I've irritated people, but I have a good reason why I don't lie to these people. Mm-hmm. Because I've run into instances where when you do tell the patient you're going to the hospital, they lose their shit.
Oh, sure.
And I don't want that happening in the back of my ambulance.
Because they're going to figure it out.
Right.
Especially when you pull up to a fucking hospital.
Right. So, no, I looked at him and said, we're not going to a parade. We're going to the hospital. He goes, why? I said, you tried to punch somebody. You did punch somebody. You punched a staff member. Oh, my God. Is he okay? I used to be a boxer. You know, and that's the level of disconnect that can go on with this.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, he, you know, when he's told about it later, when he's, you know, when he's more normal.
Yeah.
He's concerned. Is he okay? You know,
because
I can mess him up.
I don't mean to brag.
Right. But. Exactly. This one lady, they kept telling her, staff told her, a police officer told her, we were taking her to her sister's house as we're getting her on the gurney. And she goes, you're taking me to my sister's house? I remember I stood there for a second. I looked at the cop, and the cop had a look on his face like, don't say it. Don't say it. I said, no, ma'am, we're not taking your sister's house. We're taking you to the hospital.
We're going to a parade.
We're going to a parade. And I said, we're going to the emergency room. And she went apeshit.
Mm.
Started yelling at me, stuff like that. And the cop was looking at me like,
the fuck,
yeah,
man?
Yeah, what the fuck, man? And I stood there. I said, look, this is what's going on. I said, if you want to get to your sister's house, we have to jump through some hoops. And one of those hoops is we have to go to the emergency room and make sure that you're,
yeah,
you know, you're not sick.
Because what I don't think they realize is that this breakdown she's having is going to happen.
Right.
You
and
just
that's what I said to the cop, because we got her going. We got to start getting strapped down. Got her calmed down. Mm-hmm. He's like, why did you say that? I said, because I didn't want that to happen in the back of the ambulance while we're doing 60 down the highway.
Yeah, because sooner or later, she's going to look out the window and see the hospital.
Right.
Like,
or know that we're not going to her sister's house.
You know?
I mean, like that, you know, so it's... It's very tough. These people start developing that paranoia because, well, they're stealing from me. They're taking my money. Well, they get lied to, but they also know they don't have access to their money anymore. Their child does. And they don't see the fact that the child's paying for the care, you know, the care they're receiving or the food they're eating. Just money's going missing and they're stealing it.
You know, it's funny you bring up stealing. I actually, around Alzheimer's patients, I will put my hands in my pockets.
Yeah.
And it's because this just happened one time is I actually, this is back in one of my wheelchair days. I walked in and I walked by some, wasn't even my patient. And I put one of my hands in my pocket and she's like, what'd you put in your pocket? He's stealing. Check his pockets. And she just started getting all lit up. And then that became an issue.
Right.
Because she was lit up and because I put my hands in my pockets. And now.
What were you stealing?
Look, Mark, you know I have a dentures collection.
I've got a reading glasses collection. We should compare the two.
Oh, God. Mark and I bring that up. So I'm currently a supervisor. Mark was a supervisor, couldn't hack it. And one of the things, we get phone calls for missing belongings a lot daily. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Just based on the way the system works, we rarely, if ever, have them. I would say 10% of the time we have them.
Well, because the thing is, the things that go missing, the most common being
dentures
or reading glasses.
Yeah, or hearing aids.
Hearing aids are big ones because something happens, they fall out, the person puts them down, they get caught up in linen. I'm not saying the hospital's doing this on purpose, but it's just the most natural catch point for these things.
Yeah, because here's the thing is, there's not a lot of space that's going to be in the ambulance.
Right.
The ambulance comes back to the base, it's cleaned out. So anything that's – here's the thing, because the people who clean them are going to be like, yeah, it's probably standard issue pair of dentures. Let's just put that back in the wall. You know, if they find the dentures, they're going to bring them in or they're going to go in the lost and found. So it's either in the ambulance, in the lost and found, or the paramedic took them home, right. Which I'm going to say probably not. And if they're not one of those two places, it's probably at the hospital.
Right.
So
now, again, like I said, I mean, it's just a natural, the blankets and everything are just natural catches for these things.
Yeah.
Somebody takes their glasses off. They move around in bed a little bit. They change blankets on them, you know, and there you go. Now they're gone. So during this stage, patients may also start stuttering and become frustrated with this. There's a lot of frustration starting through all these stages because, like I said, the patient knows they're an adult. And they're not able to do the things that they used to do or the things that they want to do. So stage 7, there are sub-stages to the final stage. Each lasts about a year and a half. Speech becomes limited to 6 words or fewer. You may need to repeat questions during an interview. Speech will decline to only 1 recognizable word. Then the next level is speech is lost.
And I think for some... In my experience, that 1 recognizable word has been ouch or ow. Very, very frequently anyway.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of patients where, you know, it gets difficult to assess because they say ow, 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 ow. And then he asks, you know, the caregivers, is this kind of all they say? And they'd be like, yeah, that's that's the only word they have is ow.
After that, they'll lose the ability to sit up independently. After that, you'll start seeing that the grim grim facial movements replace smiles. They no longer really smile. And then they're no longer able to hold their heads up. Bodies will become rigid, and a movement will cause severe pain. And about 40% of people with Alzheimer's also suffer from contractures or shortening and hardening of the muscles and tendons. And this is where their arms and even their legs will contract in towards the body, and you can't move it out.
It's it. One way to look at it, and this is not the same physiological process, but to take every muscle on one of your arms and just flex it as hard as you can and watch what your arm does.
Right.
And now lock it in that position for essentially ever.
Right.
And it's very painful as well.
Oh, yeah. Then they can also develop infantile reflexes like sucking. Hmm. So, you know, those are your seven stages of Alzheimer's. And legitimately, I mean, this could be a 10 to 20 year process, 10 to 17 year process, I think. But it can go much quicker. And you can have patients who are in stages of Alzheimer's and they maintain for many, many years or many, many months, and then they will have a sudden decline in their mental ability.
Oh, I hear that a lot. I hear it's like, yeah, well, he's been
really good.
And then in the last 6 months, though.
Right.
You know.
Or 6 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know. Again, one of the things that they have to do is they have to go rule out infections. Patients with these, especially when they start having problems with their toilet habits, they are very susceptible to like UTIs.
Right.
Urinary tract infections. Yeah. And I'll tell you, man, UTIs mess up the elderly population.
Oh, check out our sepsis episode.
Yeah.
Urinary tract infections, it's almost a given when you walk in on scene to an altered level of consciousness and elderly patient, the first thing I start thinking about is infection, UTI being one of those things, because it's so common.
I've had patients – I took a patient into a hospital. I would have laid money. She was having a stroke. She had facial droop. She had right-handed weakness.
Damn.
She wasn't speaking properly. I mean, code 3 into the hospital, stroke, stroke, stroke. We get there, they take her down immediately to get her checked, you know, do a CT scan. It's one of the situations where they don't even take her off her gurney. Mm. We move her off our gurney into the CT machine. You know, they start running everything. All they found was a UTI. They gave her IV antibiotics. She cleared up.
Damn.
And she went home like 5 hours later.
Yeah, I'm just going to put it like this. I'm just going to say that you nailed it as a paramedic. And you did the stroke call so good.
Right. We fixed it.
That's right. Yeah. That's all that was left to find.
Right. No, because I went back and I was talking to the doctor. I'm like, hey, man, how'd that stroke we did earlier? He goes, yeah, UTI. She's gone home. I'm like, what? He goes, I know. I was on board with you, man. Yeah. I was heading down that stroke path. He goes, and we did every test we could, and we found nothing except a UTI. We gave her some IV antibiotics. Everything went away.
Wow.
He's like, no more facial droop, no more right side weakness, no more speech problems. She started sitting up and talking to us. And
she's actually offering her fourth book.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, since you brought her in.
Yeah. So, okay. So pretty much, you know, there is no cure for Alzheimer's. I was talking about doing the Alzheimer's walk, and they have different colored flowers for different groups.
Okay.
People who are suffering from Alzheimer's, people who are taking care of people with Alzheimer's, all that kind of stuff. The white flower, that's the one that they're waiting to carry. And that's the cure.
Oh, gotcha.
The first time they have a patient cured of Alzheimer's. Because what you do with these flowers are you can put your family member's name on them. They're made out of fabric on a framework. They spin around, stuff like that. And then somewhere along the walk, usually at the beginning or the end, you can plant them in a garden for everybody. It's fairly powerful, actually, to see all these flowers. Or to what got me, because the first year I went with my mom, my daughter, my father, was we were at our local racetrack, PIR. Mm-hmm. And as is normal for a lot of racetracks, you have a fairly long straightaway on the front where all the stands are so people can see the cars go by.
Yeah.
There were no cars these days. this day.
That would be.
We went down to the first corner and we turned, and you kind of do a, not a 180, but it's like a, you're turning back almost to, on yourself, you know. And the sheer number of people walking.
Yeah.
I mean, this is four lanes wide, you know, and you're talking probably three quarters of a mile or a mile, and it's packed.
Wow.
And the sheer number of people. Then you get to the end, and everybody's planting these flowers in the garden in memory of their people. So it's a very powerful day.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it seems like it would be. It should be. Seth Rogen is he's a comedian and a actor. He was in Superbad. He played one of the cops in Superbad.
I know who Seth Rogen is.
Yeah, he is a huge Alzheimer's activist.
Is he?
Yeah, he actually spoke to Congress.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like I said, there's no cure for this. Basically, you're going to have some medications that can slow down or inhibit the symptoms. A lot of times for moderate symptoms, you're going to have cholinesterase inhibitors are prescribed to mild to moderate Alzheimer's patients. These reduce some of the symptoms and help control some of the behavioral symptoms. Medications like Razadine or Exelon or Aricept, which we see quite a bit of. Severe symptoms, you're going to get Namenda, which is a N-methyl-diaspartate aspartate antagonist.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously, sorry. Mark. You don't know your D-methyl aspartates? Where'd you go to paramedic school?
It's N-methyl-diaspartate.
That's what I said.
You did not.
That, yeah.
This drug's main effect is to decrease the symptoms, which could allow some people to maintain their life functions a little bit longer. There's no cure. There's no cure. So you're going to die from this.
Right.
So next up, we have the second most common, which is?
Vascular dementia. The
What is it? Come on.
Tell me. Vascular dementia.
Tell me what is it.
I did. I'm afraid now.
Are you scared in your recording place?
Right. So this is the second most common type of dementia. It's caused by a lack of blood flow to the brain. So vascular dementia can happen as you age, and it can be related to atherosclerotic disease or stroke. Atherosclerosis is basically where the blood vessels that feed your brain become hard, and they lose their ability to
soften. So you have the hardening of the arteries in the vasculature, which inhibits their ability to contract and expand.
Right, which inhibits blood flow and also makes having a stroke a lot easier. So symptoms of vascular dementia can appear slowly or suddenly, and depending on what's causing it. Confusion, disorientation are common early signs. However, later on, people may have trouble completing tasks or concentrating for long periods of time. It can cause vision problems and can also cause hallucinations as well.
Hmm. So, treatment, right?
Treatment.
So, again, this is more of treating the symptoms, not necessarily curing the disease. If the underlying cardiovascular disease is the problem, that can be controlled through either medications or healthy lifestyle. You know, for example, after someone that has a stroke or a TIA, you may take high blood pressure medication to reduce the further risk of stroke and dementia. So basically, as opposed to Alzheimer's, where something is doing damage to the cells, in this, this damage is being done by an outside force, such as a stroke. So a stroke, either hemorrhagic or thrombic type strokes, being either you have a major bleed or you're starving the cells. Yeah. And so this is brought on by that. So decreasing the chances of that happening will help. Healthy lifestyle. If you're a smoker, you need to quit. I mean, that's kind of a generalized thing, no matter what, whether you have this or not. And you should be decreasing your levels of fat and salt and eating more vegetables or oily fish.
Why can't cheeseburgers be healthy for you? Do you know how much better of a biological design that would be if, like, food that tastes so effing good was, like, the healthy stuff? Like, step aside broccoli.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It's terrible.
Yeah. So, other than that, I mean, like I said, there's really not a whole lot of treatment for it. After that, we have Dementia with Lewy Bodies. Dementia with Lewy Bodies, also known as Lewy Body Dementia.
Whoa.
I know. They really went out on a limb on that one, didn't they? It is caused by protein deposits in the nerve cells that interrupt the chemical messages in the brain. So this causes memory loss and disorientation. So you're having these proteins build up so that the messages just can't get through. So it's similar but different than Alzheimer's.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's similar in that something is interfering with the cells, but it's happening a different way. So people with this type of dementia also experience visual hallucinations again, and then having trouble falling asleep, which actually one of the things that comes along with dementia is sundowners. You have a look on your face like you've never heard of sundowners before.
It's actually a look that you and I have had this conversation before, and I just can't recall it.
So basically, these patients have a hard time sleeping at night. When the sun goes down, they will become much more active.
Okay.
And the problem is they don't understand really that it's the middle of the night, so they're wanting to go do normal day activities.
Yeah, and that's not going to work.
No.
Like parades.
Exactly.
It's a parade.
You know, they'll have trouble falling asleep at night or falling asleep unexpectedly during the day. They can become lost or disoriented. I think we both run those calls where an elderly person is on the side of the road and they're just not.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I talked about the guy who was peeing outside the memory care, outside the assisted living just recently. He had to go pee. So in his mind.
So medical myths one. Yeah.
Yeah. In his mind, the obvious answer was to leave the building he was in that had a bathroom in it.
Yeah.
And go outside the door and pee in the bushes. Dementia with Lewy Bodies shares many symptoms with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. For example, they may develop trembling in their hands, having trouble walking, feeling very weak. They will be given the cholinesterase inhibitors to help with this. They can also get carbidopa-levodopa, which is used for Parkinson's and helps reduce the Parkinsonian symptoms, the Parkinsonian shakes or the rigid muscles and slow movements.
Parkinsonian sounds like it's a competitor for the Smithsonian. TV Zems are going at it.
Tired of the long lines of the Smithsonian? Come on down to the Parkinsonian. It's a two-for-one day, you know. And then, of course, you're going to get medications that treat other symptoms in the disease and in the body. Now, here's the problem. A lot of medications, especially when you start mixing them, create side effects.
Oh, yeah.
And so then you have to weigh the advantage of taking these medications and potentially having to take other medications to counteract the symptoms of these medications. And if you don't have a primary care physician or one doctor kind of running the show, it's very easy to end up with a ton of medications you're taking every day.
Pages.
Oh, yeah.
Pages.
The biggest one I had was I actually ended up just taking the medications to the hospital. And then I sat there with this bag of medications. And I'm not talking like a Ziploc baggie. I'm talking like a trash bag.
Dude.
She had 52 different medications prescribed by two doctors, mainly. There were a couple other doctors in there, but the ER physician was pissed.
Yeah.
That nobody was sitting down. He's like, these three medications counteract each other. He's like, nobody's sitting down. He's like, I need to find out who the, he was like getting ready to write up the pharmacy that she was getting her medications from because the pharmacist there wasn't doing his job of being, hey, wait a minute here. Part of the pharmacist's job is to be that last line of defense about mixing medications.
Right.
You know, and they do have a certain amount to at least call the physicians and be like, hey, look, you know, y'all are prescribing all these medications and here's some problems here.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, running up that red flag.
We had an issue with the facility. This is actually quite a bit ago, but there's something wrong with the way they're keeping track of a patient's medications. And every time he would get medications changed, they were adding those medications.
Not substituting.
And so we went on there and the guy was having a hypertensive crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Go figure. Because one of the problems that he actually has is chronic hypotension due to the fact that he had a spinal cord injury that actually caused him to a form of distributive shock.
Mm-hmm.
Check out our shock episode. And so he is on a lot of medications to help boost his blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they were just adding more.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they would, you know, we were actually called there because they took his blood pressure and it was through the roof where they're like, this is really abnormal for him. And I didn't clue in. I just saw that he's, I knew what the meds were for, but I'm sitting there, I'm like, huh, well, that's weird. So take him into the hospital. And then, I don't know, it was a little bit later that day, ran into the nurse and she was like, yeah. And she was like, yeah, do I ever believe this story? I'm like, oh, I might. And yeah, she told me, I'm like, oh shit, go figure.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I mean, like I said, if you don't have that one physician or that one person doing the footwork of double checking things.
Yeah.
You know, this is where the GPs really come in and shine. I mean, general practitioners generally don't have a specialty other than leading the band.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you don't have a strong GP to really kind of step in and be like, wait a minute here, we need to.
Got
to
have an OG GP.
Right. So I was in the hospital and I was becoming septic and the ER doc was talking to the primary care physician. And he was like, well, he's on a immunosuppressant, so maybe we shouldn't release him right now. Maybe keep him for observation and see what goes on. And after I didn't know about this until after I got out of the hospital and went back to see him for a checkup, for a recheck, you know.
Yeah.
He's telling me about this. And I told him, I said, Dr. D, you have my permission to get up in anybody's grill at any time, and I will back you up whatever you say. Because he's an excellent physician.
Yeah.
And one of the things that makes him an excellent physician, he knows three words a lot of doctors forget during medical school.
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that, so I'm going to go research it.
Right.
I don't know if what's the best choice. I'm going to send you to a specialist.
This is what people got to understand about medicine. There is no one expert on everything.
No.
Does not exist.
Too much information out there.
And the sooner you realize that, the better.
Oh, yeah.
Here's the thing. Paramedics, we are the best people. I'd put us above most physicians in those first 10 minutes of shit you need to save your life.
If it's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to do a lot of good for you.
Now, after those,
we drop off quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with these medications, there are some that you do want to avoid. Some with anticholinergic properties, which can worsen cognition, or dopamine antagonists, which cause hallucinations. Also, first generation antipsychotic medications such as Haldol should not be used to treat Lewy body dementia. This can this may cause severe confusion, severe Parkinsonism. It makes the Parkinson's worse. Sedation is sometimes even death, you know, so you gotta be careful with that. And second generation psychotics may be prescribed for a short time at a low dose, but only if the benefits outweigh the risks.
And that's in Haldol is actually fairly commonly used.
Oh, yeah.
In the treatment of psychiatric problems.
Right.
And again, unless someone's aware of Lewy body dementia, these are things that can mimic behavioral issues as well.
So a couple other ones along the way here. We have Parkinson's. Advanced Parkinson's disease will develop. A lot of times people with advanced Parkinson's disease will develop dementia. Early types of this dementia are problems with reasoning and judgment. So not only do you have Alzheimer's, you get dementia along with it.
Yeah.
It's like a bonus. Frontotemporal dementia. This affects the front side parts of the brain, which are the areas known to control language and behavior. It's also known as Pick's disease.
Oh, real quick. So I think you meant to say not only do you get Parkinson's, you get dementia. You said not only do you get Alzheimer's, you get dementia.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Okay, because first I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait a second.
Didn't we start out by saying that Alzheimer's is a type of dementia?
Yeah.
No, so a lot of people with Parkinson's will end up developing a dementia factor with it.
And Parkinson's, Michael J. Fox had Parkinson's.
He does, still does. Yeah.
That's right. He's not dead.
And I believe that this was one of the reasons why Robin Williams committed suicide, because he was diagnosed with this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I had heard that.
Yeah. So frontotemporal dementia, this is something that affects the front of the frontal lobes of the brain, where you control language and behavior. It's also known as Pick's disease. Now, the difference about this is it can affect people as young as 45.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm 47. So they don't know what causes it yet again. It does run in families, so it's genetic. And it does have Jesus Christ. It runs in families, and so it will have mutations in certain genes. You also have Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which is one of the rarest forms of dementia. Only one in a million people are diagnosed with it every year. CJD progresses very quickly, and people often die within a year of diagnosis.
Oh, wow. That's aggressive.
So symptoms are very similar to other forms of dementia. Experience extreme agitation, while others suffer from depression, confusion, loss of memory, also common. And it can cause twitching and muscle stiffness. Then we have Wernicke-Korsakoff syndrome, or Wernicke's disease, or Wernicke's
encephalopathy.
Yes, right. You said you wanted to say it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's a type of brain disorder that's caused by a lack of B1, leading the brain to leading to bleeding in the lower sections of the brain. I know where we kind of see this a lot, or where we're going to see it, is in patients that are severe alcoholics because they don't eat properly.
Oh, gotcha. So
they have a vitamin B deficiency. And also, because they don't eat properly, there was a period of time where we were carrying thiamine for these patients because we would give them D50 because their sugar was low and it could cause Wernicke's.
Wow.
And so we would give, if we found the patient was an alcoholic, when we gave the D50, we also gave the thiamine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thiamine was just kind of something they talked about when I was coming through. But
right. The problem is that the amount of times we truly came across a situation like that.
Pretty low.
I mean, like once a year. And it's actually reversible over a period of time. So it's not like you give them the D50 and they're going to have Wernicke's for the rest of their life. If you get them to a hospital, you know, you can they can reverse that fairly quickly, if I remember correctly. Korsakoff syndrome is a memory disorder caused by advanced Wernicke's. People with Korsakoff syndromes may have trouble processing information, learning new skills, remembering things. All very familiar at this point, you know, for dementia. But it's technically not a form of dementia. However, the symptoms are similar to dementia, and it's often classified with dementia. You have mixed dementia. Mixed dementia refers to a situation where a person has more than one type of dementia. Mixed dementia is very common, and the most common combination is vascular dementia and Alzheimer's. Now, remember, those two have two fundamental different ways of causing the dementia. So, and according to the Jersey Alzheimer's Association, up to 45% of people with dementia have mixed dementia but don't know it. And then normal pressure hydrocephalus.
Also known as Neil Patrick Harris.
NPH. It's a condition that caused the person to build up an excess of fluid in the brain's ventricles, not their tentacles. That's a completely different area of their brain.
Yeah. The ventricles are actually, if you listen to our cardiology thing, the ventricles refers thing podcast. Yeah. refers to chambers of the heart. Well, the ventricles, you actually have four of them. They're chambers in the brain. Mm-hmm. And they are just, they're holes that space. Or
chambres, if you're in France.
And it contains, usually it's filled with cerebrospinal fluid. However, too much fluid in there basically turns these chambers into balloons.
Right.
And these balloons can cause pressure on the rest of the brain.
Right.
Which can cause dementia.
Right. So according to John Hopkins Medicine, an estimated 5% of dementia cases are caused by Neil Patrick Harris.
Some of the potential causes of Neil Patrick Harris include injury, bleeding, infection, brain tumor, previous brain surgeries. However, sometimes doctors don't know the cause of Neil Patrick Harris. We should probably stop calling it that before we get a letter.
Or a very, very angry man.
Yeah.
A very angry, fantastic man at your front door.
Absolutely. But you know, if he does show up, be like,
I'm willing to take the lawsuit at that point, yeah. I think, just get to meet him.
I am really sorry. Hey, would you want to record an episode?
Have a seat.
That would boost our volume.
Oh, yeah. Or at least just mention it.
Yeah.
Mention our podcast.
Mention you're suing me. Exactly. That's fine.
No such thing as bad press.
That right? is fine.
Some of the symptoms include poor balance, forgetfulness, changes in mood. These all seem fairly common amongst the spectrum of dementia. Loss of bowel and bladder control. And again, seeking treatment early as possible can help the doctor intervene and assess the brain before additional brain damage occurs. We have Huntington's disease, bringing it on home. Huntington's disease is a genetic condition that causes dementia to exist, juvenile and adult onset. The juvenile form is rare, thank God, and causes symptoms in childhood or adolescence. The adult form typically first causes symptoms in the persons when they're in their 30s or 40s. So not much better, really.
No.
Prime of your life. The condition causes a premature breakdown of the brain's nerve cells.
I think when you're in your 40s, you're kind of past your prime.
Shut up. The condition causes a premature breakdown of the brain's nerve cells, which can lead to dementia as well as impaired movement. Symptoms is the impaired movement, such as jerking, difficulty walking. I thought I said waking. I just can't get up in the morning. Trouble swallowing. Focusing on tasks, impulse control, you know, many diseases cause dementia in the later stages. For example, people with multiple sclerosis can develop dementia. It's possible for those with HIV to develop cognitive impairment and dementia, especially those not taking antiviral medications.
Learn more about that. Check out our STDs episode.
There you go. So in all of these different diseases that come under the umbrella of dementia or beside dementia, because not actually officially dementia, they just have the same symptoms of it. It's very important for the person to stay active and continue to do things they enjoy, getting out, going for walks with somebody with them.
Right.
Just wish them good luck. And we've, like I said, we've run those calls where people get out, they go for a walk, and they can't find their way home. You know, keeping mentally active, cognitive stimulation. I mean, even as you get older, you can still... What's going on over there?
Sorry, man. Just when you said walk with them or just wish them good luck, I just have this image of someone just opening the front door, just being like, okay, Mabel.
Time for your daily walk.
God, I hope so. Dinner's at 5. Do we even give her a watch? I don't.
So keeping mentally active is also very important. You know, just because you're getting older doesn't mean that you have to lose that cognitive ability or just allow it to happen. I think you and I had a conversation when we were working together about how we've noticed that the average age of nursing home patients seems to be going down dramatically.
Yeah, we have had that conversation.
You know, that there was a time when I started when nursing homes were literally elderly patients that were just unfit. But now you have people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who are in their electric wheelchairs all hanging around outside the nursing home.
Yeah.
Smoking. Chatting. Yeah. Doing whatever, you know. And it's that level of inactivity or, you know, not really challenging yourself that can help accelerate these symptoms.
Yeah.
So, very big problem, getting worse. You know, unfortunately, it's a very expensive problem, you know, in that trying to, especially as a patient advances to the, you know, to the final stages, that finding places that the family can afford to put their family member because they need 24/7 watching.
This is expensive, too. It is
expensive.
People don't realize.
You know, we're talking thousands of dollars a month, and you're not exactly going to get a whole lot of support from Medicare, insurance companies, because they don't want to pay out because it's expensive. Mm-hmm. But they can't, it's not safe for the patient to be at home because you can't have anybody to be there watching them 24 hours a day, because having somebody come in and watch them 24 hours a day, even more expensive. Plus, you have the medications, and then you have the doctor's appointments, and you have transport for them. You know, a lot of times these patients get to the point where you can't just put them in your car and take them to a doctor's appointment. They have to go by wheelchair van, you know, and that's 2, 3, 4, 5 times a month, $100 a time.
Yeah.
That's not covered by insurances.
Well, and care facilities, in addition to all that, care facilities are getting overloaded, well overloaded. And because the need for them is substantial and it's only growing.
Right. You know, obviously new facilities going up constantly. And I kind of go, oh, every time I see one being built, just because, it shows an increase in call volume in that area. So, anyway, Chris, do you have anything else?
Nah, brother, I'm good.
You good on that? Okay. So, we are Medical Stuff. We're on the tweets at MedSide Stuff. We are on Facebook at Medical Stuff. We're on Instagram at Medical Stuff 52.
You can also email us at MedSideStuff@yahoo.com.
MedSideStuff at yahoo.com.
And you can listen to us just about any place you can find a podcast.
If you have a podcast catcher, just type in Medical Stuff. We're on iTunes, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio.
And if you happen to find someplace we're not and you want us there, let us know. We'll do our best to get there.
Please send us any questions, comments, ideas for other shows. If there's something you want to hear about that we can maybe talk about.
And leave a review.
Yeah.
Only if you like the show.
Exactly. Leave a 5-star review.
Yeah.
You can say whatever you want in the review. Just make it a 5-star review. So be honest at all times. Anyway, you all have a wonderful day and thanks for listening.
Toast.